Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, top 10 NPR. How sweet that is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. And Ken, once again, you've recommended a winner. And this one has the worst title of the year.
Oh, John, this is the kind of movie that makes me happy to be a film critic. Folks, we're talking about a movie called Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. And this is one of the most original movies I've seen in years. And, John, this movie is so politically incorrect that you can't help but fall in love with it.
It's a sci-fi comedy.
Thank you for saying it's science fiction. This is a science fiction movie. This is not just an action movie. It's actually good science fiction. If you remember 12 Monkeys with Brad Pitt, or you remember Terminator 2, it's a very similar theme, the soldier coming back in time to save the future.
And if you remember Twilight Zone, in the diner, there's what, more than one person?
Oh, yes, there's one person too many, and at least one of them is an alien.
I mean, this is Rod
and
Serling
the
stuff.
Fact that we can talk about Twilight Zone and be inspired by this movie says a lot about how good a science fiction movie this movie is.
And to your point, too, with Rod Serling, you didn't even need to know that it was science fiction because it's so true and it's so ironic. It's so many of the things that Rod Serling loves. And then you say to yourself, oh my gosh, these are Martians, these people. So there's a similarity to it because this one, you lose the science fiction sense after a while as we get into the personalities in the diner. Now look at, they're in a diner in L.A., Norm's Diner, without the apostrophe, I think.
Yeah.
It's Norm. And in comes...
In comes a person that looks like a homeless guy in a tattered raincoat, all kinds of tubes and apparatus strapped to his body.
Which he claims are explosives.
Which he claims are explosives, and he's going to blow up the diner. But he announces right off the bat, he is from the future, and he needs a group of people in this diner to come help him save the world. And, of course, people react exactly the way you expect them to. That he's a crazy homeless guy, and we're just going to stay here and wait until he blows the world. You
know, he does look homeless.
Until he gets arrested.
I don't think it's ever firmly established that he is from the future.
Oh, he says.
He says in his
spiel.
But I think that interpretively, he might be just some wacko.
You get the impression throughout the film he could still be some wacko until things start happening that make it realize, oh, no, there's something weird going on here. And the fact that he knows the names of everybody, and you find out that there's a little bit of a Groundhog Day going on. He's done this over and over
117
and over times trying to find the right group from inside this diner to help save the future.
Ken, you didn't say what they're fighting.
They're fighting AI. They are fighting AI-dominated future that has taken over the world. This is a subject that has been played with in science fiction movies for a number of years. And we'll talk about that in the podcast afterwards, is AI taking over the world. But that's a very difficult concept for a science fiction writer, because how do you make AI threatening? What is it about AI that's really threatening? AI taking over your commercials and making commercials or putting movie writers out of business is one thing. But how do you make AI taking over the world a threat? And they do a very effective job. And the best way to do it is you make the AI a single entity, a single mind that is bent on harming the human race.
How about a 9-year-old boy?
Yeah, well, a 9-year-old genius who is the one that creates AI.
He's sitting on this mound of wires, and he's pounding away on his computer.
On his computer. You know, what's a particularly creepy scene? Yeah, this bald 9-year-old kid creating a machine that's going to take over the future. Kind of like in Terminator 2, the idea of Skynet. Create this AI with the idea that it's going to take control of our nuclear weapons and protect us, and then it decides, no, it doesn't like people.
But I'll tell you, the genius that Verbinski offers us is, for all this stuff, he never really shows us the effects of the AI. It's all our fears.
And that's well, and that's an inherent problem of talking about a villain as that's yes, AI. Yes. Other movies that have tried to do AI in the future have also struggled with this problem. What we haven't touched upon is just how darn funny this movie is. Oh my gosh, this is one of the funniest films I've seen in several years.
I know.
And it's funny, folks, not because it's just telling you jokes. It's funny because it's got this distorted, dark side to it. If you're science fiction fans, imagine locking Harlan Ellison and Douglas Adams together in a room with Douglas Adams wrote Hitchhiker's Guide.
That's right.
One of the funniest science fiction of history.
Similar in some ways to this.
Similar in some ways to this. And of course, Harlan Ellison gave us multiple stories of soldiers coming back from the future to save the future in the present. A Demon with the Glass Hand from Outer Limits, Soldier from Outer Limits. And so this ties very nicely into the story that we've got. And I got to tell you, folks, how dark this is. I'm tempted to use a different word, but how dark this movie is. There's a whole skit where one of the characters has lost her son in a school shooting.
Oh,
and what they do when someone loses a child in a school shooting is the government pays to clone the child. And the child then comes back to you, but the child has built in jingles for advertisements that they have to spout periodically. School shootings are so common in this future that one family has lost the same child four times shooting.
I love this conceit. I love the idea. After the Columbine, for instance, you wouldn't dare.
Oh, no.
Get near this.
No, this is so politically incorrect, and yet it is so darn funny. They pull this off, and this is the genius of this movie, is it crosses the line into political incorrectness so often, and yet it manages to triumph every single time. You're just sitting there going, I shouldn't laugh at this, but boy, is this funny.
Also, keep in mind, this is a journey.
It's it's a road trip film.
Yes, it's a road trip film.
Even though the road trip is all of about a mile and a half, they're trying to get to the house, from the diner to the house, where the kid is making the AI. They know in the future where the AI was created, and they've sent this guy back in time to the present, to this diner, to try to assemble a team, travel about a mile and a half to this house, and take down this kid before the AI is activated. And he's got a watch on him with its time clock telling him how much time he's got before the AI becomes sentient.
One of the things that caught me right away, an irritation in my life has been the emergence of smartphones.
Yes.
And and as an educator, I saw it coming, and it was so difficult to deal with. And as I watch in this, they've caught it perfectly. All these kids on the phones. If you go outside and you travel anywhere and you see people walking or riding, and they're frequently, and it's not just kids, but they're frequently on their phones.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, you know, the things to smell and hear.
And this is one of the things this movie does, is it attacks social media and attacks our dependence on smartphones as a dehumanizing thing that is going to ultimately lead to our downfall.
And I can so understand. Now, we were talking about plagiarism, for instance. We were talking with some teachers about this. And how do you deal with it? How do you deal with a paper that a student gives you that's too well done? But what are you going to show? Because I don't even know now if there's a trail yet for these. As there was when I was teaching, we had a software that could pick up on plagiarism.
Yeah.
And it was easier to do, although I could tell a student's plagiarized paper in one sentence.
Yeah. You know what the student is capable right. of. And when you get something that's the work of a master,
right.
you know that somebody was involved.
I think that this film is creative. It's zany. And so, therefore, I ask my friend here, what do you recommend?
Well, if you're a science fiction fan, this is an absolute must-see. This is a canon film now in the AI villain science fiction genre. If you're somebody who's a fan of dark comedy, again, you got to go see this. If you love Dr. Strangelove, go see this movie. If you remember The Bedsitting Room, well, first of all, God bless you for having seen it. This is like Spike Milligan. This is like the great British comedies of the 60s that were attacking the politics and the social inequities and the things that were really, really damaging society, and doing it in a way over the top comical way that just leaves you laughing your head off.
It's a good one for the family. Probably kids should be 10, 11, 12 before they begin to tackle it.
Well, I would love to see kids see this, to see what all that sitting around watching your phone all day is going to do.
Oh, I know. Yes. Well, that's a good point.
That's
right.
That's exactly what we're trying to, what this movie is trying to attack.
It starts much earlier.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So I think that they've attacked better than anybody I've seen the AI without beating you over the head with it.
Yeah, I mean, this was the subject of the last Mission Impossible series.
Yes.
And the idea of this one singular AI that's going to take over the world. This movie does, in an hour and a half, a much better job of addressing the AI taking over the world than that Mission Impossible did in 9 hours.
All right, KG Klein, we're talking about the sci-fi comedy called Good Luck, Have Fun,
Don't Die.
And this is apparently the greeting from the future.
This is the greeting, the intro to the game that everybody gets caught up playing in the future.
All right. So let's talk about some sci-fi comedies.
Oh, let's. That's a favorite subject of mine.
May I start with a bit of the absurd, and then I'll ask you to
go. Oh, please do.
My first one is Abbott and Costello Go to Mars.
Okay. That's an entry in the Abbott and Costello franchise.
Right.
So it's an Abbott Costello movie that just happens to be set in space.
Exactly.
Don Knotts did one, The Reluctant Astronaut.
Yeah.
In the 50s and 60s, it was very common to do these space-based comedies.
I think a far more sophisticated one, one that everybody knows about, Back to the Future.
Back to the
85.
Future. Yeah, comedy, kind of young adult, fun film.
Yeah.
I mean, a classic, you know, he gets shown in film festivals the time. And you really have to see all three of them because it's one story played out.
Right.
And the thing that Spielberg did so nice is he played with time travel and he managed to make it work.
Yes.
And a lot of directors leave holes in their plots, especially Star Trek, when it comes to time travel.
I have one here that I don't remember all the specifics about it, but I do remember it was quite an exotic film. And this would have been in 1985, Brazil.
Oh, yes, Terry Gilliam.
Yes.
It's probably his masterpiece.
I know.
Yeah, funny, it's very dark, it's very British.
Yes.
And you almost have to watch it two or three times to really figure out where the head is in this movie. Not for everybody.
And again in 85,
mm-hmm.
one, not seriously sci-fi, I think, as I remember. Cocoon, would that?
Cocoon, okay, that was more of your geriatric actors.
Oh, it was, yeah.
It was nice to see them bring back all of these veteran actors. Don Ameche never looked better in this science, very nice rom-com, science fiction rom-com with an elderly cast. Really beautiful film.
One that may be as well-known as any as I have on the list.
Okay.
And this came out in 2016. Well, it might have been before, too, because there are iterations. Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. Ghostbusters. Actually written Dan Aykroyd.
Okay.
Yeah. Very interesting backstory. That movie originally started out as an 800-page script that was going to take 14 hours to be a movie. And it was going nowhere. And then they sat down with Dan and said, no, cut it down to 200 pages. Just get the essential elements. He hated doing it. And he did, and he got one of the great comedies of the 80s, one of the great comedies, period. I'm going to throw two out at you, though, that you may not be familiar with. The first one, and again, to anybody out there who's familiar with this movie, God bless you, The Bedsitting Room, 1968. Okay. Spike Milligan was one of the founders of British comedy in the 50s and 60s. Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, and the Monty Python gang all rest on the shoulders of Spike Milligan. The guy was absolutely crazy, and he was diagnosed with mental health problems, but he managed to come up with amazing, amazing comedies. The Bedsitting Room was based on a play that he did in the West End. It was just skit comedy, very free thought, but it's set in a post-nuclear war world where the nuclear war lasted 1 minute and 47 seconds from the launching of the missiles to the signing of the treaty. They're praising God bless Mrs. Ethel Stokes, who is the closest thing to a surviving member of the royal family that they could find. She was the nanny to one of the princess's daughters.
Oh, God.
A lot of what you see in Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die is very similar in style to Spike Milligan.
Okay.
So if anybody out there is a Spike Milligan fan, go see this movie.
Yeah,
another one I'm going to throw in there is Galaxy Quest.
Well, I had that.
You have that? Yeah.
I think that is one of the most sophisticated, funny, very, very well done.
Some people think it's the best Star Trek movie ever made.
Right. Yeah. And I guess that's what I want to say is that to enjoy this thing.
It's very, very enjoyable without being pretentious.
Yeah.
And even Patrick Stewart was hesitant to see it. And then the fellow who played Riker on Star Trek said, I've seen it. Go see it. There's no fear. And Patrick Stewart went and saw it. Then he stayed and saw it again. And he became a huge advocate because he said, if only they could have written the Star Trek movies this well.
Ah,
it's both funny, well acted, and it really does go after Star Trek in all the right ways.
Maybe less science fiction-y, but still you'd have to call it sci-fi comedy. I thought Men in Black.
Men in Black, yep, that would be another. That's good science fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, based on a graphic novel series. And it is funny.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw one out to you here that you might not have thought of, which is Dr. Strangelove. If we consider Dr. Strangelove to be science fiction, one of the greatest comedies ever made.
And you are so right. Now, why not? Because it's actually got such serious themes in it that you tend to forget it is science fiction.
It's satire. It's very dark satire. It's Kubrick. Breen is brilliant as Kubrick has ever been. And many people put it at the top of their favorite film list.
One that I'm so about, maybe because it's been so overplayed, I guess would come in this category. And this was back in 75.
Can
you believe that? Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Rocky Horror Picture Show, a science fiction transvestite musical that took the world by storm, largely on the basis of the amazing casting. The cast on the West End show, Tim Curry and Richard O'Brien, all of these cast members who would go on to reprise their roles in the movie, started a cult phenomenon that no Hollywood director had ever considered possible. It's still playing today.
Yeah,
here in Columbus, you can still see it on weekends to this day.
It always seems fresh and new, isn't it?
And I myself have done 151 shows of it.
Really?
Yes, and when I was doing theater in Pittsburgh, the director of our department said, if anybody wants to go and join the Rocky Horror cast, go right ahead as long as it doesn't affect your schoolwork, because any time that you're in front of an audience is time that you're in front of an audience.
Good.
It's stage time. It counts.
Yeah,
it helps you get comfortable in front of an audience. Do it. Just go and do it. So I did. I was playing Eddie for God knows how many shows, and once or twice even played Janet.
Good luck. Have fun. Don't die. The heart of this is Sam Rockwell's performance.
Sam Rockwell. It's a great cast.
Yes.
The cast other than Rockwell are almost all unknowns.
Yes.
That's a great cast. The woman that plays the princess, very, very nicely done. She reminds me a lot of, also the one that got me was the mother who lost her son.
Okay.
She manages to be very tragic and funny at the same time.
Yes.
And you have no idea as an actor how hard it is to be tragic and funny. That's a really
thank
high
you. That's
bar
really a great point
to hit. Yeah.
About this movie.
Yeah.
Rockwell had an Oscar for his best performance as a supporting actor.
Three Billboards. What a great film that was, with Woody Harrelson's greatest movie.
Epping, Missouri.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that movie won Best Picture, and it swept the Oscars that year, very deservedly so. And if you haven't seen it, well worth seeing. I want to hit you with a little bit of a back history to the use of AI in science fiction movies.
Yeah, do that,
because this is too fascinating of a subject not to touch upon it here. So the first time we see something resembling AI, artificial intelligence, in a science fiction movie is in 1927 in Fritz Lang's Metropolis, when they create a robot, Maria, who dances provocatively and manages to seduce the men of the metropolis and basically destroys the social structure of the city. That is the idea of AI as a disruptive force. But it doesn't stop there. Now, when we get into the 40s and the 50s, we start seeing science fiction focusing more on the threat of the Russians and then the threat of nuclear war. AI stays out for a little while there, but it comes back again in the late 50s, early 60s. The first time we see it is in television on The Twilight Zone.
Mm.
We see it in an episode written by Isaac Asimov, the great Isaac Asimov. Mm-hmm. He wrote a short story called I Sing the Body Electric, which was about a time in the future when families who have lost their mother and have children, when they've lost their mother, they have AI grandmothers who come in and take care and raise the family in the place of the mother. And he wrote this extremely touching and very sympathetic story. And what's notable about that is that the AI is benevolent. The AI is never a threat. The AI, once she's done raising the children to adulthood and she's back uploaded into a mind where she can talk about her experiences with the other electric grandmothers who are talking about their own, the children they've raised. Just a beautiful story. So AI doesn't have to be dark.
I wanted to step in here with my favorite sci-fi, as you know, Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet, yeah.
And there's where I thought I see the fusion of the science fiction and the reality of the human mind coming together.
Based on Shakespeare, you can't go to a better source.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So after that little Twilight Zone episode, the next time we see AI really is an interesting film from 1970 called Colossus, The Forbin Project.
Oh, yeah.
So again, the question is, how do you make an AI-controlled world a threatening place? Well, you turn over control of nuclear weapons to the AI. You say, here's the nuclear arsenal. You were programming you to protect the human race, to keep the human race from killing itself with nuclear war. And the AI says, oh, well, now that I've got your nuclear weapons, we're going to play it my way, and the human race is going to be obedient to me so that I can protect you, and the only thing you have to sacrifice is your personal freedom. Mm-hmm. And then you get the battle between humans who want to be free to do both good and bad, and the AI that is telling you, no, you're going to do as I tell you so that the race will perpetuate forever.
I'm so glad we currently have responsible people to press that button. Anyway.
Yes, yes. Colossus, the Forbin Project is important because it heralds the films of the 80s like Terminator and War Game, that wonderful film with Matthew Broderick from 1985.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Again, the idea of turning nuclear weapons over to Skynet or to this computer, and then the computer the AI goes wrong. But then throughout the 70s, we've got AI again, and the directors are struggling with, how do I make this threatening? Lucas does it with THX-1138. A world where AI runs humanity, and humanity is dehumanized. People are rebelling and trying to find personal freedom by escaping the AI-controlled world. And then we also see it again, Logan's Run, a movie that you mentioned a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
The idea that we have this wonderful future where you can do anything and everything. You don't have to work. You can indulge your wildest dreams, but you have to die when you're 30.
Yes.
And the AI is there looking over your shoulder every step of the way to make sure that you are happy and then dead at 30.
Oh, yeah. Well, K.G. Klein, I can tell you, you're just starting. So why don't you end up with one of your others?
AI, we see throughout the 1970s in TV, Battlestar Galactica. The original Battlestar Galactica was the Cylons were AI. Then the remake of Battlestar Galactica in the 2000s, the Cylons are completely machines. And again, this is the machines against us. In this case, the machines each had their own individual personalities, but the really darker version is when the AI is a singular personality. It's just one mind that's trying to oppress the human race, and the Wachowski brothers did that in the 2000s or 90s with Matrix.
All right. Oh, yeah. Matrix is...
Matrix. A franchise that started out on a very high note and then gradually degraded into not what we were expecting, but really, really good take on the idea of AI as the oppressor of humanity in the future.
All right, how does Blade Runner fit into this?
Blade Runner doesn't have AI except in the idea that robots with individual personalities are given a sentienthood, a life.
Yes.
And they want to keep that life. And the question that Blade Runner asks us is, do they or do they not have a right to want to live?
Yeah.
Is Harrison Ford's character, Deckard, the Blade Runner, shooting and killing them because they want to continue living? Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy?
Right, right.
Yeah, because are they really asking for more than they're entitled to? And then that raises the question of, once an AI becomes sentient, does it have rights?
Yes.
Which many science fiction authors have touched upon this and will touch upon this for many years to come. And I'm sure when it finally happens, there's going to be laws in place. But the question is, can we look on AI as a sentient being, as a sympathetic thing? Can we coexist when it happens? And folks, it's going to happen.
I've gotten into a program in my phone that summarizes my conversations. It comes back, and it's brilliant.
Oh, dear.
John said this to his daughter, Jessica, and da-da-da-da-da. These guys are reporting on my phone, my conversation with her, and they're doing spotless job in doing it. And that's
right now, AI is a very good tool, a very effective tool. But watch out, because, for instance, in the movie Forbin Project, Colossus is the AI. Well, Elon Musk has just created his supercomputer in Memphis, Tennessee. And what did he name it?
Did he?
Colossus.
Did he?
Yes, he did. He's seen the movie.
All right. KG Klein, good luck. Have fun.
Don't die.
What's your final recommendation?
Go see it.
It is. And I think Ken believes this is his best movie
Unless you're easily offended, go see it.
No, right. Not that it's Shakespeare, but I think like Shakespeare, you have to keep going back. There's way so much. It's such a good film. There is so much in almost each sequence that you'd want to go back and look at it.
Oh, it's such a fun movie. It's worth seeing a couple of times.